Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Visible by Numbers on beautiful BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the Internet. This is your host, Allison Bachman, and I'm happy you decided to be with us this evening, and I hope that everyone is doing well. Now, being a numerologist, the one thing I particularly like to do when I'm preparing to interview any guest on the show is to look at their numerology chart. It really enables me to see my guest in a light that would otherwise take far more time to see. My guest this evening, according to his numerology chart, and in my own words, is a wise old sage, a seeker of the truth, a walking, talking mystic who has a gift with communication and a deep and abiding connection to the divine. His numbers tell me that he's on a spiritual quest in this lifetime, in which he'll be drawn to spiritual philosophy and, in turn, to find his truth and, from his experiences, hopefully share it with the world. He brings esoteric wisdom from past lives into this lifetime, and for him, it's not so much in the learning but in the remembering that he finds his greatest gifts. He is a man of great intelligence, wisdom, and insight, and most likely an expert in his field. Now, when I read his bio, I can see where he definitely is doing work in alignment with his numbers and his destiny. His journey in this lifetime has brought him in contact with some of today's greatest spiritual teachers, and certainly he can be counted among them. In his own words, he is an internationally recognized teacher, author, lecturer, healer, and visionary. Nigel is an ambassador of the heart. For over 30 years, he has traveled the world, immersing himself in different cultures, traditions, and beliefs, allowing him to synthesize a deep awareness of human and divine nature. He has assisted thousands of people towards health, healing, and spiritual understanding, as well as spiritual fulfillment. The release of his book, Simple Divinity, follows the success of his first book, Initiation into Miracles, and precedes the release of his new book, Swami Travels in the Ocean. Nigel has a background in psychology, philosophy, education, and counseling, and it really is my pleasure to welcome him to the show. Hi there, Nigel. How are you?
Hi, Allison. Nice to hear your voice. I am very, very peaceful and happy.
Well,
and nice to be sharing with you.
Well, we're glad to have you. I know a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, Susan Duvall, spoke very highly of you, and she was the one that really encouraged me. Says you really need to get him on the show, so you can thank Susan for the torture I'm going to put you through tonight.
Well, that's fine. She's a very sweet soul.
She is wonderful.
She does wonderful work.
Yes. Well, listen, the way that I really would like to start my interview is just, if you would take a moment and share with our listening audience a little bit about yourself, perhaps maybe tell us about your journey to becoming the person that you are today. I think they would be interested in knowing.
Yeah, sure. I was lucky to be born to good parents. In the perception, I say good parents, they were loving, they were very nurturing, and they came from a fairly strong working class background in England. And I also had the blessing of a mother who was exceptionally psychic. Mm-hmm. And that actually became a burden to her, because in her age and her time, it was something that was frowned upon. And so she tended to suffer significantly from that particular gift. Having said that, and growing up in that environment, my parents decided to move away from Britain because of somewhat of the challenges that had arisen around my mother and people's perception of her in that experience, and they shifted across to Australia. And it was in those very early formative years of my first 10 years as a child that I started to have some very beautiful and profound spiritual experiences stepping out into the world of spirit. There was one classic example that I will always remember to this day. I used to, as a child of about 5, 6, 7, I would go to bed, I would simply say my prayers, as so many children would say, Dear Father, please bless Mum, Dad. I go through the whole gambit of who I was praying would be blessed, including, I guess in that time it was the Beatles and my budgerigar, etc. And I would reach a point where I would say, and also bless yourself, whoever you are. And if you are who you are, then where did you come from? And with this posing of the question, I would eternally seek to understand who God was, because if God existed, then where did God come from? There was the question of what's behind, what's behind, what's behind.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately that would cause me to pass out from consciousness, roll out of the body and go out into the spiritual realm. Well, that spiritual realm was one that introduced me to a lifelong friend who I have called the Dreamer. And from those very early years, the Dreamer was guiding and escorting me into places and understandings and warnings and blessings that shaped the journey which I took, which was ultimately my parents migrated to Australia. I grew up in Australia, and then at a fairly young age, about 24, I put a rucksack on and I took off to travel the world. It was in those years where I had the opportunity to meet people of different races, creeds, cultures, backgrounds, to see and experience the practice of these traditions at a grassroots level, that it was the greatest and most blessed eye-opening I believe I could ever have, leaving aside any studies, any books, any form of prayer or meditation. The actual meeting of people from these different cultures was that which shaped the ability to, first and foremost, I would say, have a degree of understanding and not so much tolerance, because I think that is demeaning of other people's beliefs, but a level of acceptance,
right,
that we are what we are.
Right.
And tolerance is more of an arrogance, that if we tolerate somebody, we're saying, I will allow you to exist. Whereas an acceptance says, this is fascinating, and thank you for showing me and sharing with me, and let me see if I can understand it deeper. And that was ingrained into me the more and more and more I met with different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
That then took me back to Australia, where I was teaching, and I then ended up teaching the Australian Aboriginals in the West Australian bush.
Mm-hmm.
They, again, became beautiful and very powerful teachers to me. We're talking the young ones now.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, shortly after that, I decided that the contribution I could make inside a system was less effective than the contribution I could make outside. I pulled out of the institution of education per se, started a series of training programs for teenagers to assist them to understand deeply, more so than ever before, about what life was about and how they could contribute to their own well-being, mentally, physically, spiritually. And from there I moved on to work with adults, and the rest becomes history.
Right, right.
Brings me to where we are.
Right. Taking you back to your childhood experiences, you know, some of the numbers that are sitting in your chart certainly speak of an ability to make those connections. I've always found it fascinating about numerology, that some of us are simply born, you know, that's part of the path, and so therefore that connection is very much needed, because, you know, you really did come to do what you're doing today. And the fact that your mother was psychic, you know, it tends to run in family, so I'm not surprised. And it's what you're talking about with the teaching young people, you know, the mysteries of life and what life is all about. That's something that's just incredibly needed today. I know that it's discussed by many people, you know, to teach young people to stay authentic rather than be influenced by, you know, what society teaches, or being influenced, trying to be accepted or loved. You know, they change who they are. And so that's very important work. I did want to talk you know, about your book. You know, you know, I know that you wrote Initiation into Miracles, which I had not read, but I know that it received a great deal of international acclaim, and it was very successful. And this book, Simple Divinity, Discourses with a Dreamer. Now, I was a bit perplexed by the title. because
it only became simple if you read the whole thing.
I mean, I did not find it to be simple at all, but rather, in order to process the words in your book, you really had to be still.
Yes.
And slowly digest the information.
Yes.
And it's the type of book that provokes deep thought and not something you can polish off in a weekend. In fact, you know, I have to admit, I'm still working on it. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you can't move on. You have to sit and you have to dwell and you have to think and you have
That's
to process.
Yes.
And there's so much that is discussed in this book, Nigel, that,
yeah.
you know, we can't even begin, not in the time that we have here to cover it.
It's actually simplified, too.
Oh, well, I'd hate to see the hard version, let me tell you.
well, you know, in context of your comments, it's very true. And when I was finalizing and bringing it together, I'm looking at this, and one thing that became clear to me, and I knew that inevitably it would be received, obviously, by different people differently, but the great majority would suggest the same thing as you have, that it is far from simple divinity in its essence as a straight read-through from beginning to end. But what does unfold, and what I've encouraged those folks who I've shared with to do, is to actually move through it regardless of whether something becomes a hiccup, which it can at certain points, because there is a cycling that goes through, and by the time it reaches the end, it has cycled around the same track, but the track has actually gone up in a spiral.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time you've gone around this this circular track, you've actually gone up in a spiral and come to a point above where you started in the center.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to actually do the cycling through it to reach that point. And when you reach that point, which is literally where it closes off, it offers the possibility of an aha, which then gives you the capacity to shed all the material which took you there. And that's inevitably why it became Simple Divinity.
Right.
Because at the end, it was very simple, and it showed the pathway of how we get there, sometimes in a complex manner.
Right. Well, yeah, I, as I said, as I said, you sit there and you read, and then you think, and then you... You know, it's hard to move on. It's something that really you need to work through slowly. One of the things, you know, you mentioned the dreamer earlier, and so I think that giving our listeners, perhaps in your own words, who is the dreamer? And the dreamer is very integral to what the premise of this book is. So, you know, we've danced around it a little bit, but maybe in your own words, answer those two questions.
Yeah, the dreamer from... My perspective as I sit here is the voice of my heart. It is the voice, therefore, of any heart, of any being, who chooses to enter into the silence and attune to the highest truth that is at the back of all creation. And the dreamer to me, even though in the early stages took form and presented, and for the want of gender, I'll say presented himself to me as a child, that has been what I believe to be the way for most spiritual journeys, that we first move through a form where the form actually builds up the yearning to wish to be one with that eternal love and that light which is coming forward to teach you. My first experience that I recall as being with the one I call the dreamer was at the age of 5. Shortly thereafter, I had an experience of drowning, and after having gone through that experience, a series of events then started to unfold for me. One of which was, before my parents decided to make that move from England to Australia, that I was taken out through the door of spirit, and I was walking down a glorious sun-bathed beach of great expanse in a country I knew as Australia. Now, even though I hadn't done anything to know about Australia at that age, I knew it was Australia. I could even tell my parents, as I did, that I had been to a place called Australia, and they looked at me as if... Well, my mother understood, but she didn't understand, because at that point in time, they were attempting to migrate to Canada, and that was not allowed, and so they then moved on to Australia. But I actually, in that experience, came along this beach, and I saw this beautiful being, and I just described this being as a being of love, standing, waiting for me at a distance on this beach. And from that moment onwards, I started to develop a yearning to want to always be able to go back to that place. And so rather than always being back in that place, the dreamer started to come to me in different places and different guises. And eventually, that very same dreamer has, for me, become the eternal source that many people would say would be Jesus representing the Christ. It would be Satchasai Baba representing the Christ. It would be the Dalai Lama representing the love of that eternal heart center, the Lord Buddha, Lord Krishna, and Hanumanji, a number of the divine blessed beings, which all ultimately are form aspects of that one eternal principle which is consistently guided and directed. And eventually, as you move through life, you realize that form is only a gateway into the heavenly realms, and that the form that the dreamer takes for me has now moved into a formlessness and becomes an eternal centered guidance from the heart. And it requires of, well, for instance, myself, as it requires also of anyone who chooses to endeavor to understand what their truth is, a going inside and a finding a place of peace and a listening and then monitoring that voice and that guidance. And, of course, endeavoring to discern whether or not you have understood what you perceive to be the truth that's being revealed to you. So, therefore, the dreamer is a center point of divine guidance that has infinite forms and literally informs and guides all traditions. At the ultimate point, we use the generic term of God, but in the sense of understanding that everybody has a different relationship to their own internal guidance, this is the source point of guidance in my life.
Mm-hmm. And so in this book, which, you know, the point that I wanted to bring to the audience is that you are having a conversation and asking many, many questions of the source or the dreamer or what you just described. Yeah. And that is the premise of the book, sharing the wisdom. Would that be safe to say or correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, one thing I want to tell our listeners is if you go to the front page, the home page of BBS Radio, and if you look on Monday nights and Visible by Numbers, you can either click on Visible by Numbers or click on the show info tab. And you will see a write-up for Nigel, and there you'll see his websites. One website, Simple Divinity, directs you to the website about the book. And then his own personal website, NigelTaylor.com, will give you some more information about Nigel and his work. And certainly we invite you to go visit the websites and, you know, maybe as you are listening to Nigel, you know, pick up some more information. Because like I said, there's simply no way, Nigel, I mean, simple is not the word, but I will endeavor to do my best.
There's more volume coming. I'll do my best.
Okay. Well, all right. So, if you're interested in a copy of this book, and I have to say that this is certainly, it appears to me on a personal level, and this is just my opinion. I'm not I don't review books, so what do I know? However, you know, I have been a seeker myself, and I have studied many things in my life, and certainly, you know, there are books that contain a great deal of divine wisdom, and I would highly recommend this book, you know, as a journey to provoke thought and transformation, I think, and perhaps perspective. It'll give you perspective and some things to think about. And you can get this book from those websites on that front page that I just mentioned. Now, Nigel, you know, I'm going to pop around a little bit about the book, you know, because I certainly can't cover everything, okay? I have saw many references to the state of the world, you know, what appears to be ominous signs of change, even ties to the 2012 prophecies.
Yes.
And I would like to have you share, maybe briefly, what does Dreamer have to say about this?
Well, you know, the whole principle of prophecy is, to me personally, and therefore it's come through in the book to a certain degree, is something of great fascination. And what I have found, and this is therefore shared in the book, is that there are different levels of prophecy. And one thing is almost like cut and dried, almost. Obviously, you know, there's room for discussion on this, but there appears to be what is a lower level of prophecy, or what we would call lesser prophets, and there appears to be what we would call higher or greater prophecy. And in many instances, there are gathered around in the consciousness of this planet at this moment in time a significant amount of lesser prophecy. And to that degree, a lot of it is fed through the filters of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And many individuals, rather than actually discerning where the source of that truth in that prophecy is coming from, actually accept it and contribute their energy to a bundle, if you would, of expanding fear, where others who may not have thought clearly about what is actually truly unfolding at a deeper level can become vulnerable and therefore susceptible to contributing to the continuance of a fear-based prophecy. Now, when we go to a greater prophecy, it would be, from the perspective that I perceive, those beings, men and women, but ultimately it's spiritual beings at the end of the day, men, women, and children in many instances, who have most likely had a large number of incarnations in the pursuit of truth, maybe blessed by very great experiences which have caused them to grow in those lifetimes under the tutelage of perhaps one or two of the great masters that have been present across time and space. In so doing, those prophets, and we could be talking about Elijah or John the Baptist or something of that nature, these beings have actually had the capacity to perceive into a higher supernal light and perceive things which they then reveal in accord with our capacity to understand, and therefore they present it in a metaphoric manner, in a symbolic manner. And the twists and turns of interpreting that at a lower level of wisdom provide us with the capacity to slip into fear through vulnerability. Now, when it comes to things such as 2012, and I want to make it clear, I am no expert in any sense on the Mayan prophecy, but when it comes to the field of dialogue, which is based on 2012, there is a question that must be asked. What does 2012 represent to the hearts and souls of those who have vested time and energy and interest into that particular stream of prophecy? Then we cross back and ask, what does, in the same way, what did the end of the millennium mean to those who invested time and energy into the unfolding of the expectation that 2000 was the closing off of yet another epoch or era in the spiritual realm. And I guess the best way I can address that is to suggest this. When I think it was Michael Drosnin, David Drosnin, that brought out the book The Bible Code, and that was about 1995 or something. He brought one and then volume two out, where he had taken, by working with a code, he'd taken the early books in the Bible and he had used a computer program to offer people the capacity to ask a question and get an answer. For instance, you put in the words John F. Kennedy, and then I think you would find Lee Harvey Oswald at an adjacent point inside the same page in code. Now, there were a series of questions asked of that Bible code by the author and by those who assisted him in doing that work. But here's the real key. If you ask questions inside a contextual framework which is limited by the background from which you come, you will only gain answers from any prophecy which reflect that background. So therefore, the highest and most revealing way and that I believe you can get an answer from any prophecy is to rise above all the traditions in which they are actually birthed and find some higher questions to ask of these independent prophetic traditions. And that hasn't, to my knowledge, been done inside the Christian tradition, inside the Hebrew tradition, or necessarily even inside the 2012 tradition yet. Although, I have noticed that there are some people and some folks who are definitely grappling with the 2012 issue and saying, listen, you know, it's 2012 and beyond instead
right.
of it's 2012.
Right.
It's 2012 and beyond. And that's a most positive sign of a breakthrough in people's perception of what that particular prophecy has to offer us.
Right. Well, I think, you know, from my understanding, that in order to, this is a time of so many people have awakened or looked at their lives and began to ask if there has to be more. There's
yeah.
a certain awakening that's happening. I find this in many, many clients, many middle-aged people that just, you know, their traditional religion or traditional beliefs are just not, they can't justify their life. And I really feel that there's a shift in consciousness that is meant to happen during this time. And the shift in consciousness, you know, to take this world that we have and to bring to it love and peace and where we all are one rather than it's one country or one belief system or nations. And that we all, when you unify everyone in a common cause that's greater than economics or greater than oil or greater than profits, but you unite them in a greater cause, you know, of humanity itself,
yeah.
and that is based, it brings it to the base of love and caring, and that's the way I perceive it, that 2012, that events leading to that is just purely to shift our consciousness to prioritize what is important and to show how things are not what we perceive to be important are not, and oneness is really where I see, you know, this shift going. I mean, that's my perception of what I see in it, but it's interesting what I read in your book, which brings me to the next question about thoughts. The words that I found particularly meaningful that I read, and I'm going to quote from your book if you don't mind, because you said it best. There are thoughts that cause good to transpire and those that cause harm to others. One should always nurture pure love. Pure love is neutral and births good thoughts. Those create positive karma. Positive karma yields meritorious behavior, and such behavior develops virtuous character and brings blessings upon the self and all of creation. Thoughts that intend to harm another harm the thinker many times over. And to me, that's the shifting of the consciousness.
Yeah.
Now, I was wondering if you would, we've heard a lot about you monitoring and looking at our thoughts and paying attention to our thoughts. Certainly, there's been a lot written about it, especially recently. But I was just wondering if you want to, expand a little bit upon that, because I really, I found that to be very insightful and meaningful to me.
Yeah, it's really, at the end of the day, we come to a place where we realize that the mind is either a servant or it is a master.
Mm-hmm.
And that the tool of the mind is the capacity to use the spiritual force, the spiritual energies,
mm-hmm.
by way of the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And a master of the mind, and hence a spiritual master, can dream into creation the purity of love by directing thoughts which clearly bring positive benefits to all those with whom he or she has direct interaction, and by default all other beings across this planet, let alone the cosmos, because it is almost incomprehensible that a thought stands alone and does not have impact across this entire cosmos, because our thoughts are, as Yogananda once said, you can look at the power of the sun and marvel at its intensity and its heat and its capacity to give fire and light, and you can marvel at the tide, and you can also wonder at the power of the wind. But these become as nothing to the power of one thought that is generated inside your own mind. Now, that one thought, if it is filtered through a mind that is subservient to the spirit, and a spirit that realizes, or in self-realization, that it is one, and in your term, the spirit of oneness, that you are here in this eternal dance of creation, and you have a chance to make choices. And those choices are what thoughts to give power to. We may not always be conscious of the thoughts that come through, but we can be conscious of the thoughts we give our power to.
Right.
And that becomes where discernment is important.
Mm-hmm.
And once we discern what thoughts are going to be of benefit,
mm-hmm.
to not primarily ourselves, but to others. Because inherently, the thoughts which benefit others benefit ourselves. It's been clearly stated in the Vedas that when another person is critical of you, fear not, because they are removing your bad karma. So that, in actual fact, if you turn that into its positive loop, if you are being, in the positive sense, projecting positive, definitive, and discerned thoughts into a field of consciousness whereby they are based on love and unity towards other beings, you are not only, in this instance, removing your own karma, but you're not contributing to other people feeding their own mm-hmm. negative energies, which may cause them hurt, because it's like an acupuncture needle, if you will. If you have the power of spirit through and you place your finger or your thumb on the needle in a person, you can pass that energy through and cause them discomfort. So, therefore, the choice of thoughts in my own life is this. Is this thought leading me closer to love or away from love?
Mm-hmm.
And by love, I define that as, does this assist me in my yearning
mm-hmm.
to merge with the eternal principle in a place of service and joy, so that the life I lead is one which can at least be of assistance to those who I care about and to the broader well-being of those beings who share this planet with me. So it's really a matter of realizing the power of a thought. I mean, you know, a thought is neutral until we embody it. It's like thoughts exist, and this is a metaphor because clearly this is much, it's a very limited way of describing, but thoughts exist inside shells. And a shell which consists of anger is an energetic presence. If we become aware that that shell exists within our life, we can very, very easily intervene and make a conscious choice to neutralize that energy and then to change its color by yearning for that love to fill our soul and to fill our being and use that love to go forward and be of service in the positive rather than the negative, where the anger would have taken us into a circumstance which is counterproductive to ourselves and to other people.
Right. Well, you know, numerology is really founded on the principle that we are reincarnated, and
yes.
Certainly certain numbers reflect that for some of us, we are working through karma having to do with perhaps an experience in a past life, something that we chose to work on in this life. And I found the thought very interesting about, you know, actually, you know, being able to reduce the karma or eliminate the karma or even create good karma through your thoughts and being based in love and being of service to others. And I really found that to be very interesting. So I wanted to thank you for that. Moving on, well, one thing I want to do, Nigel, is, you know, I could probably ask you questions all day long, and yeah, well, actually, we could do it 24 hours, and I wouldn't even begin to touch this. But obviously, you know, we're talking to someone with a great deal of insight, and I do want to open up the lines for our listeners. You know, perhaps, you know, someone's out there on a spiritual journey, or maybe they would like to ask you a question about what the meaning of life is, or anything whatsoever, comment, perhaps they've read your book.
Of course, and in answering, in asking the question, they'll provide their own answer. you
true.
Know, just in context of something you were saying, one thought that comes to mind is the sharing that the dreamer once gave me was this, that we are born with a blessing body, and blessing body represents our karma. And that doesn't change. We are born with whatever we're born, and they're all blessings. Whether we are born with the body of an Amazon or we're born in some function which is suffering, and all of the experiences that unfold in life, that's our blessing body, which is another way of saying this is our karmic body. But the blessing body is a beautiful way of looking at everything that unfolds. However, a blessing is different from grace. And that is to the degree to which, through the recognition that we are a spiritual being engaged in the search of love and service and discerning the use of our spiritual energies, we can, through the appropriate use of our thoughts, engage and embrace a gift of grace, which is a flood of eternal love which pours down upon us and negates some of the karmas which would traditionally have been played out had we not have taken the path of searching for the truth of our soul and our spirit.
Right. Very well said, of course. Okay, well, what I was going to do there, Nigel, is
I
wanted to just give, you know, besides me keeping you all to myself, and I have to say, you know, I mean, on a very superficial level, I could listen to your accent for hours, but that's just me being me, but I do want to open up the lines, you know, in the event that someone's listening out there and would very much like to ask you a question. So if you don't mind, I'd like to give the numbers. Okay, you're listening to Station 1 on BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the Internet. My guest this evening is Nigel Taylor, and we've been discussing many things about simple divinity. And you are welcome to call in with your questions. We would love to hear from you. The toll-free numbers are... You can call toll-free USA at 877-876-5227. You can call toll-free from Canada at 888-876-5227. 815-9756. And you can call the station direct at 530-876-3222. And I'm sure that we would love to hear from you. So the lines are open. Now, you devote, getting back to the book and things that I wanted to ask you about, Sacred Stones, Nigel, and how important that is to your, I believe in that. That's a personal thing with me. But I was wondering, you know, maybe you would like to share your thoughts on that with our listeners?
Yeah, well, I guess, excuse me, the understanding that I have of sound is that it's like we speak in most traditions about the power of the creative word. And if we actually go back to John, in the beginning was the word, we also find that an earlier translation of that was, in the beginning was the logos, and the logos is a Greek term which implies or explains ratio, pattern, proportion, and those ratios and patterns and proportions which we would see as sacred geometry actually have, and sacred geometry in light and frequency actually have their home in sacred sound. Now, at the highest level, the sacred sounds are what we could determine to be the God force or the goddess forces. And so if you were to take, for instance, the articulation of a sacred alphabet, be it Sanskrit or Hebrew or one of the alphabets which have been around for a considerable period of time, or the languages rather, and if you articulate those sounds at the level at which they are initially designed to be articulated, you are invoking within yourself, not calling from some external source, but you're invoking the eternal God source that is on that wavelength. So, for instance, there would be, if you took the Vedic tradition, the goddess Lakshmi is a sacred name consisting of sacred sounds, which, when it is placed inside, the name Lakshmi is placed inside a sacred mantra, it will actually awaken within our cellular structure, our atomic structure, our chakras, and also as we move up through the causal bodies, etc., it will awaken that goddess energy within us so that we do a number of things. And we can either say it clears the cobwebs and the debris where doubt and fear and negativity have found a home inside our soul that prevents us from experiencing the abundance of God's grace. Or alternatively, it acts as a magnet to place us on the same vibratory scale as those opportunities which enable us to move into the realization of those experiences. Now, at the mundane level, it calls upon us to be extremely careful in our use of language and our use of words, because certain terms, words, phrases, and therefore the articulation of them in a string of words into a sentence create a vibratory energy which would be the equivalent of, if you took it to the highest level, stringing together a series of God forces, which may in actual fact be forces that can be used in a destructive sense, albeit they were never meant to be destructive, they just happen to be destructive because of the way in which we are using them. And so our language and the invocation and the articulation of our language, we need to think very, very carefully. And when we think carefully about our use of this language, we become much more empowered as a co-creator in this universe. The Vedas actually make it clear. They say that every human being has a specific number of breaths, a specific number of heartbeats, and a specific number of words in their incarnation. Not exactly that way, but it alludes to that in those in that terminology. Now, what that would tell me, apart from anything else, is we need to be mindful of our words. If we don't have something to say that is going to be productive, we would be better off being in silence. But when we do say something, be very aware of what you're saying, because you're creating. And look at the ramifications on your whole energy body, because your words will often, if they are not carefully crafted in order to be creative and beneficial, create stress, and the stress will affect your heartbeats, and the heartbeat, of course, is tied to the breath. And if you've got a limited number, then to utilize them in a non-productive way with language which is creative is counterproductive.
Mm. That's a very interesting concept, I must say. I found that that aspect of what I read in your book was very interesting. That's certainly something that, you know, you have to sit and you have to think about. So, yeah, very interesting.
And we're only on the tip of the iceberg.
I know.
Even though I've been doing this journey in this lifetime for, you know, I mean, I'm 54 now. I've been doing it a long time. But when I sit with some of the people who I had the blessed opportunity to share with, you realize the infancy of your search.
Absolutely.
Because there are people who, and I'm talking people who've probably never picked up a book in their life and never meditate in their life. They have such a deep and abiding wisdom that pours out of their heart.
Right.
They're the ones that melt you and teach you.
Right, right. Well, I find that, so many people, you know, with numerology, which is my passion, which,
yes,
to me, that's my window to the divine, because I can find all spiritual philosophy demonstrated in people's lives with the numbers. And for me, that is my window.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter how much I learn about it. I am fully aware of the fact that there's an infinite amount of knowledge that I don't have, and that it's a constant journey to seek it. And when you think you know everything, I think that's when you're a fool.
We're in danger.
yeah. If you cannot keep an open mind and be willing to at least entertain new ideas and new thoughts, and also to understand that you don't know it all, and that there's always room for knowledge. And I really feel, with all knowledge, that you have within you, you resonate to what is true. I really believe that you have options when you read something, that you either resonate to it or you don't, and so that is how you can discern the truth. I believe that our souls speak to us constantly when we attempt or endeavor to learn new things.
I
think our souls direct us to what is true.
Because, I mean, if you're taking a book, it doesn't matter which one it is, the Bible, for instance, or you're taking a Conversations with God. But if you pick up a book, you're actually reverse cycling what has actually come through into the author. So you're reading the words, which are, again, sacred symbols, and internalizing and turning them back into the images and the feelings and the sensitivities that you can place them in, but then they process through your own heart center. They of course go through the mind, but sooner or later they must have an impact on your heart. And if you're ready to receive whatever it is, if it is truth for you, then the doorway opens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, that's what they say when you know, so many people say, I read that and I got cold chills, you know, and that's your soul.
Don't we all?
It's your soul tapping you on the shoulders and saying, hello, you are reading truth. Nigel, I hate to say this, but we've got about 5 minutes left on the show, and there's just an immense amount of things that we haven't even begun to cover. Now, one thing, I'm going to kind of set the book aside, and I do want to tell everyone that the website and the information on the book itself is right there on the front page of BBS Radio. Under Visible by Numbers, there's a write-up about Nigel and all of his information there. You can even email him. And I'm going to set the book aside for a minute. Now, I was reading on your website. I know that you have a workshop that you're doing now, which is called The Healing Power of Cosmic Forgiveness.
Yes.
But also, I was reading about that you do extensive healing work, that you actually do sessions with people, purpose of which is to help them in their spiritual journey. Are they private sessions in person, or do you do that on the phone, or how do you do those sessions?
You know, they are in person.
They're in person.
And yes, I probably do about maybe about 80 a year. I don't do them full time. If I go to a region, like we're off to Ireland in a couple of days, when I'm there, I'll be working with people for probably 5 days,
uh-huh.
and I'll be doing a class and some other stuff, and then we move on. And so they become localized and regionalized. But you see, I wouldn't know how, in my own way, to work a healing over the phone, other than the fact that I have firm faith that we can heal at a distance. But the work that is actually carried out is, when I'm with a person, this is simply a vehicle, it's an instrument. Whoever the person that comes in, they are the receptacle of their own healing.
Right.
I'm there as a facilitator. I follow whatever guidance I'm given, and they do the healing themselves.
Right.
And but I'd never regarded myself as a healer. That is something, and it's really quite part of my journey. I flatly refused to do healings, and I had a tour set up right across the States. This is going back a few years now, and I was told, the dream was so clear to me, he said, I want you to now start working one-on-one and healing people. And my response was, well, you know, I'm not a healer. And his response to me was, yes, you are, and you need to do it. Well, you know, we dig our heels into the greatest wisdom we have within us and oppose it. One by one, inside a week, there were cancellations on this tour from the Midwest to the West Coast to the Northwest. And I ended up looking at Regina and said, something's gone wrong here. The next Sunday, I was talking at a church here in New Jersey. I was talking at a Unity church, and the lady came up to us and she said, would you do some personal healing sessions for me? And you know that that's the way this unfolds. That was the beginning of the journey into healing. But let me emphasize, I know that the conducting of the healings is actually for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it is through that I learn about myself.
Right. Well, they say when you heal someone, you actually are healing yourself. So
yeah, I must have a lot of healing to do.
Yeah, well, well, I guess that's why you're a healer there, Nigel, so you can do
yeah,
some healing.
Well, I had the blessed opportunity to share with a healer today, a very sweet soul. And she gave me therapeutic massage, and I feel $1 million after that. So
wonderful.
You know, everybody is playing their part.
Yeah. Well, I think there's so many. You know, to me, I'm always amazed with the amount of light workers and the amount of people. So different, so many different modalities,
yes.
So many different avenues reaching out to help people. And I really think that for each and every one of us, there's a teacher for all of us. You know, it's not necessarily the same teacher.
Yes.
We all are on different levels, or perhaps we're meant to go off into this path of healing. Some of us are meant to go off in other areas, but there is a teacher for all of us.
Yes.
And we will resonate to that person, and we will receive a great deal of personal awakening from their teachings or from whatever, you know, they do for us. And Nigel, when they use the word teacher of teachers, you know, definitely I think that applies to you, because you really are very deep and thought-provoking that your book is. And as much as I hate to say it, Nigel, we have just shot through the hour, and I do have to close the show.
Well, God bless you, and thank you so much for the invitation to share with you and your listeners.
I really enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure and an honor and a privilege to share with you, and may you have many blessed opportunities to expand this love and light to all that you are serving.
Well, thank you so much, Nigel. I appreciate that, and the same to you. And so, everyone, Nigel and I have to go, and we really do want to thank you for joining us and listening this evening. We appreciate your being here, and I'll be back again next week. Good night, everybody. Good night, Nigel.
Good night, Allison.
Thank you for joining us this evening. For more information, or if you wish to contact Allison for a reading, please visit www.visiblebynumbers.com or email Allison at alynch@ptd.net. Have a wonderful evening and be well.